You know how every one of these podcasts, at some point, usually early on, we talk about how we haven't come up with a name for it, and we haven't come up with even names for ourselves, what we want to go by?
Yes.
So I opened a Google Doc that I have a list of just things I thought would be cool names for things. And in there I have the word flitch, which means a like an unsliced piece of bacon.
I don't like that.
Well, I'm just saying flitch. I don't know. It sounds like an interesting...
You can be flitch.
Yeah, I'll be flitch. You could be Heath the Mastodon Mastin.
Yeah, I would promote going by just like off-the-wall names. Zoo Radio style, I think we've...
Okay, so we've... Flitch and the Mastodon is how we're doing this.
Sure. For this one.
All right.
Next one, we'll mix it up.
Yeah, we'll maintain our commitment to never using the same names twice to promote instability.
I think, yeah, it helps because our voices sound so similar.
It helps because our voices sound similar for us to also use different names every time.
Exactly. Keep them on their toes.
Keep the listeners on their toes.
We don't want to get bored. They're going to get bored real quick by our content.
That's absolutely true. Well, let's kick this one off. Watch this. Watch as this happens. We are the hard, hard men. Two. Please.
Oh, boy.
I'm Flitch, and with me is the Mastodon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the problem is we don't have a soundboard, so we can't do, like...
Just self, do it by yourself.
do your very best, Ferris Bueller. Oh, yeah.
That's what I was going for.
So, this is a movie review podcast. In the past, we've done very loose, incredibly loose topics. This time, we're doing it keeping it a little harder.
Yeah.
We've been fast and loose in the past. We're going to be slow and hard.
Okay. Wait,
that's not the opposite of loose.
Tight would be the opposite of loose.
Tight and hard.
Hard and tight. Hard and tight men to please. There you go.
I don't know how I'm not comfortable with that. We're doing a quick review of a film that's actually in theaters, which is a first for us. Usually it's a movie from about 4 years away.
Yep.
And then to correct that, we're going to then do a discussion on Mulholland Drive, which is like a 15-year-old movie.
Sure. And then maybe I'll say something else about a movie even older than Mulholland Drive, if there's time at the end.
You're springing that on me. You can reference old movies as much as you want.
I recently saw a movie that was older than Mulholland Drive.
Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur, yeah.
We should see the new Ben-Hur and then compare it to the old Ben-Hur.
I don't think anyone should see the new Ben-Hur. And I've never even seen the old Ben-Hur.
Everyone seems to agree with you anyway.
That's good. Maybe I won't talk about that. Maybe next time we'll talk about my very old movie that I've seen.
All right.
But you wanted to start with the new movie, Anthropoid.
Anthropomorphic furry creatures fucking each other.
not in theaters.
Yeah, you can't see this one in theaters, folks. No, so Anthropoid is a ripped from historical drama, and it's about the attempted assassination by the Czechs of Reinhard Heydrich.
Okay.
Back in the middle of World War II, Czechoslovakia famously handed over for fucking nothing at Munich because Europe was afraid Hitler would go to war. I mean, he threatened war if they didn't give him Czechoslovakia. So they gave him Czechoslovakia, or half of it at least. And then he went to war anyway, like a true asshole, by invading Poland. And so basically this is the story of a real-life mission called Anthropoid, where they parachuted in to Czechs with the mission to meet up with the Czech resistance that was still active and assassinate this guy who was known as the Butcher of Prague. He was the guy who Hitler put in charge of the area, and he was, I think, like third in command under Hitler. For me, the immediate comparison is to Valkyrie. Did you see that one?
I did not. I partly wish I did, just to see
Tom Cruise in an eye patch.
Yeah, my boy.
Valkyrie, another movie named after the mission the real life mission in that case to assassinate Hitler.
Okay, yeah, so two different missions about secret assassinations of two different Nazis.
Yes, and for spoilers, in case anyone is historically ignorant enough to not know how Valkyrie turned out.
That's me.
Okay, there we go. I won't spoil it. But I knew going into Valkyrie how whether it turned out well or not for the folks involved.
Yeah, I would hope so.
And so, yeah.
Since it was the assassination attempt on Hitler.
Yeah.
Pretty famous guy.
So that one, I was always uncertain if it was knowing the outcome kind of made it a moot point. Because even if you watch Titanic, you know the Titanic sinks. Spoiler warning. But you don't know if, you know, Jack and Kate or whatever the hell Kate Winslet's her name. Jack and Rose. Whether they'll make it. I guess once the movie starts, you know that she makes it, and I think that he doesn't. They make it clear right away. Either way, fine movie. And I thought, well...
perfectly fine.
Yeah, perfectly good. The advantage of Anthropoid is that I had no idea who Heydrich even was. Mm-hmm. So I was like, maybe it worked out, maybe it didn't.
True.
But I think, ironically, knowing that has nothing to do with it. And I think the movie is much better than Valkyrie because instead of just being... I mean, Valkyrie was very much like a Mission Impossible in World War II.
Because Tom Cruise was in it?
Yeah.
Playing Ethan Hunt.
Tom Cruise was playing Ethan Hunt, basically. He doesn't do a German accent in the movie. He doesn't really in any way differentiate himself from Tom Cruise in any other movie.
That's great.
The movie is star-studded. It's got, you know, Bill Nighy. It's got Kenneth Branagh. What's his name? Eddie Izzard is in it.
Valkyrie, you're talking about, right?
Valkyrie, yeah. Terrence Stamp. I mean, it's a ton of guys. But they almost kind of distract from the fact. It seems like a pantomime, you know?
Sure.
You know it's Tom Cruise doing this, and they're never really an attempt to make it human, whereas in Anthropoid, that's really the focus of the movie. It's not all about killing this guy. It's also about... what that means to the people attempting it, what that means to the country afterwards. And we have a clip that kind of shows this.
Are you going to assassinate Heydrich?
What? Heydrich is the target?
For your own safety, it's best that you don't ask too many questions.
It's a bit too late for that, no?
Well, you agree to help the resistance. Who the target is should not concern you.
We are about to help you assassinate Reinhard Heydrich. Of course, it concerns us.
Okay, everyone just relax. Maybe it was a mistake not to inform you of the danger.
Murder Heydrich?
No. Assassinate Heydrich. Murder implies he has a life worth living.
So you think we are just two little girls who are here to follow the important parachutists around?
Oh, thank you.
We've been resisting here from the beginning, in our own way. I personally don't have any reservation to killing a Nazi pig. But don't treat us like what you're about to do doesn't affect us. It does, and it will. And you should keep your weapon clean because it's filthy.
So, as you can see, you know, there's... for one thing, there's reservation just within the group of the resistance of whether they should kill... Heydrich, the first thing, as soon as Cillian Murphy, as you saw there, as soon as he announces to the resistance leader, hey, that's our mission, he's like, they'll burn Prague to the ground if that happens. And then you see there are also, you know, the people with their own reservations. Just to some people, it's murder. And of course, because Cillian Murphy is the hardest dick on the planet, he's like, fuck that, assassination.
So, yeah, you're saying the Valkyrie kind of distracted with having so many big name actors in it. In that scene, I recognize Cillian Murphy, of course, but who are the other players in there, and are there any other like big name actors in the movie?
The only other recognizable faces for me were Toby Jones, who's that really weird looking guy. He played the Nazi evil scientist in Captain America movies.
Didn't see it.
And he looks like Paul. Who's the guy who we're arguing about in another one? Not Paul Schrader, but Paul.
Paul Scheer?
Paul Scheer. He looks like him.
Your immortal enemy.
No, not Paul Scheer. The music guy.
Well, Paul Williams.
Paul Williams. He looks like Paul Williams.
Oh,
so
even better.
There's those two. Jamie Dornan's in it, who's the guy from 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, okay.
And then the only other person I didn't recognize until I saw in the credits, I was looking at him and I'm like, this guy's got such an intensity and he looks kind of like, who's the guy who plays Loki?
Yeah. What's his name? I don't know.
Anyway, that fella, it's not him. Mm-hmm. Who it is Harry, it's Harry Lloyd, who plays Viserys, Daenerys' older brother in the first season of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Her, like, okay. Crazy older brother. I mean, he's got a lot of intensity, and he's really fantastic in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keeping it to guys who aren't household. I mean, Cillian Murphy's one of those guys. He's like Michael Fassbender, where I'll always show up for him, and sure. He always delivers a really good. If you're looking for a guy who's, like, intense, he's your man. And mm-hmm. in this case, you have the kind of division in the group you saw there. The older two, Cillian Murphy and the redhead woman, they are kind of battle-hardened, and they're just ready to do whatever they want. At one point, Jamie Dornan's character asks them, you know, what happens if they're trying to assassinate him en route, as he's on his route from base to home, and say, well, what happens if he has an armored car? We have time to kill him. We don't have time to get away. And Cillian Murphy's like, what happens afterwards doesn't matter.
Nice.
Yeah, and really it's that human element of Jamie Dornan's whole... He's portrayed a little bit of a shell-shocked guy where he's, or you know, just not battle-ready. But he also, he has hope for the future, and he kind of just wants to get on with his life. And I think that is kind of what, to me, separates this kind of movie from... The thing about the Mission Impossible guys, for instance, is you imagine in between missions, they're just like champing at the bit for the next mission because their life is boring. Mm-hmm. You know, the exciting thing, you know, these guys do not find this exciting. They want it over with so they can go back to their lives. And it's a brutal movie. It's not fun, but it's good. It's slightly rote in the sense that you kind of know the feeling of a World War II gritty movie.
Yeah,
but the performances are all great. I feel like I was clenching my fist through the whole film, because as soon as they drop into Prague or into the forest outside of Prague, they don't know who to trust, and so they walk down the streets. That's why the women are with them, is just because they can't walk around the city alone or mm-hmm. they'll be suspicious. And so you see this kind of thing where it's just people living, you know, they're doing their business in the backs of diners or in people's apartments, and all these people are then putting their necks on the line, and it's an intense movie.
It sounds good. I enjoy a movie that can make you like tighten up.
There were times when I could tell that I was actually like grimacing, like just like,
yeah,
like when you watch a guy get punched in the nuts or something, just that kind of like, why is, you know, and it good, but not pleasant, not a date movie.
Right. But I appreciate that, you know, movies that can have those, you know, real visceral responses yeah. out of you. Because I feel like a lot of times, maybe the movie you don't appreciate until afterwards, thinking about it or talking about it. But a movie that can make you like react in the moment, I think has some special qualities to it.
Yeah, and I think the way you do that is that you focus. I mean, you kind of have to go small to get that. If you go big and it's the big larger than life, you know, action thing.
Exactly.
It's hard to connect. But once you go small and you kind of feel like these people are living a life, then anything out of the... I mean, it's weird how much the assassination attempt itself is just kind of something that could happen on a Saturday.
Mm.
It's just something that another thing that you could try, you could do. And then, you know, it's not blowing up the Death Star, where it's this, you know, bigger than life thing.
Yeah, that's true. I'm thinking now of like watching some blockbuster action movies, and obviously they're enjoyable, but you don't get that kind of like tense feelings that you get from the only ones that come to mind now are other World War II themed movies. So that war just really was great for getting that scene out.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is there's actually apparently another movie based on Operation Anthropoid or Mission Anthropoid that came out in 2016. It stars Rosamund Pike. And so I'm interested to see, you know, how those go together.
That's funny. Do you know why it was called Anthropoid? Did they ever discuss that?
No, it's just they give a name to the mission. But it's interesting, if you look at Anthropoid versus Valkyrie, you know, Valkyrie are, you know, the warriors of the gods. And yeah, that's kind of how that movie came across, as these bigger than life action movie stars coming down, whereas Anthropoid is human like, mm-hmm. and that's perfectly fitting.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when after watching that scene. Much more tight focus, it looks like. So cool, yeah, so is that a movie you definitely recommend?
Oh, absolutely.
This is the girl. Excellent choice.
Moving on, you got a chance to see Mulholland Drive in theaters.
I did.
So can you tell me a little bit about how that works out?
Well, it was great. It was part of the local film society. They had on hand.
This is what locality?
This is what?
What local to whom?
Local to me in sunny Austin, Texas. At the film society theater, they had a screening. They've been doing a lot of Lynch lately. I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but recently I saw Eraserhead there for the first time. But this was Mulholland Drive, and they had on hand a writer who put together kind of a bio of David Lynch, and he introduced the film and brought up some really good points about it. And then we got a good restored footage of it that we watched.
So together. He spoke before the film?
He did. He introduced it. He kind of gave a little insight into, as much as he could, the mind of David Lynch.
He didn't stick around afterwards so you could ask him what the fuck the movie was about?
No, he got out of there. We all got out of there.
Was this your first time seeing the movie?
No, I'd seen it before, not too long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years prior. Obviously not in a theater, though. I saw it at home. And I remember, it's funny because I feel like I remember the first half very vividly. Because that's the half that's very easy to follow.
Yeah, that's the half with plot.
Yeah, exactly. And
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and then, yeah, the second half just totally threw me for a loop, which I'm sure it did the first time I saw it, too, and everybody who's ever seen it.
Yeah. Although the first half, I found myself wondering, where is this going? Especially little moments like, they had that interlude with the fellas at Winky's Diner,
mm-hmm.
and the guy tells him his dream, and then they go back and they see a monster face. And I was like, ah!
Oh, God, scared me. Still scared me. This is honestly one of the scariest movies, I think, for a few specific scenes.
It's scary in the way that The Shining is scary, where it's just so off-putting. There's not a lot that comes out and makes you boogity-boogity, mm-hmm. but it's just a constant unease. And I actually thought, because that guy, the monster man, doesn't come back until really late in the movie. And so for half the film, I'm sitting there, I'm like, how brilliant would it be to include this completely unnecessary scene of these guys describing a scary dream just because it puts you on edge for the rest of the movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, the guy does come back. So do you know anything about what happens? I'm trying to figure out, is everyone dead?
Well, yeah, I can kind of give, I can relay some of the insight that this guy who wrote the book gave to us, which I'm sorry, I can't remember his name right now. But
well, so, I mean, the primary thing is Naomi Watts and the wife from The Punisher. Trying to figure out who the wife from The Punisher is. I don't know the actress's name. Oh, it's Laura Herring or something?
Yeah.
Because she got in a car accident and has amnesia.
Well, to even step back and give a little more backstory about the movie itself, I don't know if you're aware, but it was set to be a television series at first.
I looked that up, yeah.
Lynch was trying to put
together.
I didn't
look up answers about it, but I did look up I like to look up basic trivia.
Yeah, it's good to put it in the context. So he was trying to make it a series, and I think a lot of, sure, definitely the writing, but maybe also some of the filming took place while it was still going to be a series. Mm-hmm. And then it obviously didn't, so he took all that and then just put it together to make a feature film. So a lot of people will point to that as a large reason why that maybe it's so freaking confusing and left up in the air. But at the same time, that's just kind of Lynch's style because he's...
Well, I kind of was waiting for it to become a Magnolia kind of thing because you have, you know, the parallel story is that the Jagoff movie director who's for some reason... Like these guys strong arm him into accepting a certain actress, and you kind of expect that what's going to happen is Naomi Watts is going to walk on the set as he's about to pick the actress and be like, no, it's got to be Naomi Watts.
Yeah.
And then gets himself killed or something. But instead, the different stories don't seem to intersect. And there's also the fella who looks like one of the McPoyle boys who kills somebody for his black book.
Oh, yeah.
In that like weird comedy scene,
yeah, that like
that'd be laughing out loud when he shoots the woman through the wall. And he's like, oh,
yeah,
like
he shoots her and then he goes and tries to take care of her when she's struggling. Yeah, that's a great like perfect example of Lynch's kind of comedy. He puts in those dark comedy.
Yeah, it is a dark comedy. It almost seemed like a Coen's kind of thing to do, like this, you know, crime just kind of going off the rails because of human error and whatnot. But so anyway, so can you make any sense of the movie?
I think you can make sense of the larger themes, and I think that's partly what Lynch wants, because he's never really given any insight into meanings behind some of the specifics. And
that's a racket, isn't it? Right, a movie, and then you don't even have to explain what it
that's
is.
That's great. And even you know, the guy who introduced the movie, you know, he talked about some of the theories out there, which we'll get to, but part of what he was saying is, don't even really concern yourself with that too hard, because you're kind of going to lose the appreciation of the film just as a film if you try and get too head over heels with the specifics. And he had a good line in there that I'm paraphrasing poorly, but he mentioned that, you know, confusion is good for appreciating art because it makes you stop and think more and ask more questions, and it kind of sits in your brain longer than if it's just all flat laid out for you.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So a movie like this, you can have endless discussions, and still to this day, 15 years later, people don't know.
Right on.
People still want to talk about it on podcasts. But
yeah, exactly.
I think some of what I got from it, also this, you know, this guy helped put that into context. The movie was made in 2001, or it was released in 2001 at least.
Right on.
So he made a good point that that's marks sort of the end of the 20th century, which can be seen as kind of the century of film. And the movie itself touches on a lot of old Hollywood themes, even from some of the...
Like what?
Well, like you were mentioning, the director who's being pressured by these kind of unnamed guys to pick this specific actress. That's kind of, I feel like, an idea of Hollywood being controlled by these suits.
Yeah,
it's very much more old Hollywood than new Hollywood, but there's more transparency these days with just people knowing the inner workings.
Yeah, that's true, because you have all those, you know, websites that kind of let you know if a movie's going to suck before it comes out, like Suicide Squad.
Right, yeah, so many more.
You're like, oh, problems on the set.
Yeah, you learn about that stuff, and jackasses like us will discuss it ad nauseum. And
what was with that guy spitting up the espresso?
That was great. I love that scene.
What was with the funny looking guy who was giving all the orders?
Which guy?
Was that the guy with the weird face, the weird head, the weirdly shaped head behind glass, and he wasn't saying much?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too. It's just kind of...
Was that the same guy who's giving orders to Han Solo's kid in the new Star Wars, the hologram guy with the weird face?
No. Maybe, but no.
Probably is. Could be.
I know you haven't seen it, but he's that same actor's in Twin Peaks. Role that's not quite similar at all, but...
Just got a classic face for being off-putting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just got that classic Lynch look where it's like somewhat, like you said, kind of somewhat off.
Yeah.
Just to confuse you more. But even he, like I was saying, that guy kind of represents this idea that Hollywood is controlled by like a central power, because he's behind those guys in the suits who are picking the movie. And the whole thing is kind of just this idea of Lynch's like kind of hatred towards Hollywood. You know, the movie's definitely a celebration of Hollywood in a way, but also like a look at what he sees as like the darker side of it.
Yeah. Well, They have the clueless dad just staring the director down, saying nothing.
Yeah, that whole director, he's kind of, I guess, supposed to be representative of like a new Hollywood, where he's not going to listen to these guys. He looks like a young douche, yeah.
Oh, man, that whole guy. So I was trying to piece it together because I was like, the thing that kept fucking me up is I was like, well, maybe, you know, the woman was Diane mm-hmm. and then had an affair with this actress and then she got with the director and then she was so upset she killed herself. And now this is like with a death reverie, basically. But at the end, the director mentioned something about how the settlement with his wife and the pool and the pool boy. So it's like that kind of places that. After all that shit. So I was like, I have no idea what happened in this film.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning this is your first time seeing the movie.
Yes, it's my first time seeing the movie. I watched it with the wife. We watched it fairly late, so she kept falling asleep and was getting incredibly pissed off because it was kind of too late in the day to put up with that.
Yeah, it's tough.
So as the disparate plot threads were not, you know, meeting, but instead were just lulling about and having, you know, twirling around. She lost some patience. I was still engaged, although I will say that by the end I was like, I can't make heads or tails about what the hell I just saw.
Yeah, I will say I am glad I got to see it in a theater for the second time at least, because...
So you could hear the other people going, oh! You're like, wait, was I supposed to learn something there?
It is funny because when you watch it in a theater, I'm kind of like a movie like that, especially, you know, you're focused trying to put it together. And his humor, like we were saying, is kind of dark. And sometimes people construe moments that I took as kind of like heavy, serious, as funny.
Yeah.
So
in a
theater, people are laughing at a lot of different scenes. Like, well, I mean, that assassination scene, I guess, is kind of funny when you look at it, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's I think, a clear comedy scene.
Yeah, I was trying to keep it straight because I was trying to put it together again in my head. But, the theater laughing kind of brings you, like, oh, okay, we can take this less
serious.
Was
that supposed to be the thing that Naomi Watts paid the guy for?
So, yeah, if you want to start talking about some of the theories.
Yeah, let's hear some theories. Let's hear some theories.
So, the most accepted one would be the movie's kind of broken into two halves, which is split in the scene where they come out of the club Silencio with that blue box. She opens the blue box.
Yes.
And the accepted theory is that the first half is more of a dream, while the second half is the reality. And the dream is of Naomi Watts' character, who is trying to kind of change the narrative of her past, where she's in reality like a failed actress who put out a hit on her lover, you know, the Rita Camilla Rose character. So she's kind of recreating how it happened in the past and put herself in more of a...
Wait, so did she pay... When she paid the guy, was it to get that black book or was it to get her killed in the limo?
The payment was to get her killed. And the idea is that the black book contains information to get her killed. Because if you remember in that scene, he's talking to that long-haired guy, and the guy makes a reference to that car crash. So that was a failed attempt to kill Rita Camilla. And now this guy's hired to, you know, clean it up. And so this black...
So she paid two separate people to try to kill her.
Well, I don't know if... Yeah.
It's a bad bitch.
That's true. I mean, I think the problem is, like I said, to try and piece it together, it's not linear at all. So
no, because then that would mean that in her dream, she was witnessing herself in her apartment having been murdered or having been suicided.
Yeah, in her dream, she saw her own body.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think just the idea, I think you can kind of agree that the second half would be the reality and the first half would be some kind of changing of the past in Naomi Watts' mind. But obviously, putting it... Like, trying to go step by step through the details is so tough because you're like, okay, I got this one. It's down. But then it's like, wait, but this scene. Well,
the reason I thought she was, because I read something, I said it was in the trivia, that said something about hell. And I was like, well, maybe she's in hell because she does mention at the dinner party that she got like an inheritance from her dead aunt. Mm-hmm. And then in the first half of the movie, which is like a dream or a reverie or whatever, she's living in the home of the dead aunt. So it would suggest some kind of underworld, I guess.
Yeah, she could be in hell, or I thought maybe there's that Club Silencio could have been some kind of hell, or what's the place between heaven and hell? Limbo? Purgatory?
Yeah, we're in limbo too. Yeah.
There's also theories out there where it's like a retelling of The Wizard of Oz, whereas she comes to the magical place, which she even mentions in one of the earlier scenes. She's like, she says it's like a dream world being in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
So she comes there, and then the Club Silencio is supposed to be Oz, where they mention that nothing's real. You know, everything's fake, similar to, like, The Wizard of Oz is just, like, a fake fabrication.
Yeah, it's true. Do you ever hear that theory that The Big Lebowski is based on Alice in Wonderland?
No. It sounds great, though.
Well, because, like, for instance, he's chasing a bunny, and, you know, she's the white rabbit. Some guy did a video on it, and he's a really annoying fucker, like one of these annoying YouTube dickheads who, like, you know, mugs at the camera, but the theory holds up that the nihilists are like the Red Queen's guards, that and what I thought made it more worthwhile than just jerking off about comparisons that may or may not equate is that interpretation suggests that the what's her name Julianne Moore's character is the Red Queen, and that would mean that she kidnapped Bunny at the outset. And it's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I'd like to hear more.
Yeah. That's funny that I did remember thinking of Big Lebowski while watching this. All the stuff with the director reminded me very much of Big Lebowski with the cowboy. Yeah. Just the idea of like the clueless guy getting caught up in like a powerful society that he wasn't aware of.
Yeah, that guy had balls. The Big Lebowski was another movie that while watching it the first time. And I still remember it was when he gets to Jackie Treehorn's house. It's just like, where the fuck is this going? And I had to, that's the classic movie that you have to see twice because you'll hate it if you see it only once. And people who've only seen it once and decide they want to crow about how much they hate it get really pissed off when you say, sorry, you have to see it twice before your opinion counts. But that's what happened to me is I was just like, I don't get it. And then you watch it again, you're kind of like, oh.
There's nothing to get.
Yeah, well.
Stylistic.
Well, but it's the whole idea is that what if there was a detective movie, but the main guy was an idiot?
Right.
And so you know, the logical conclusion would be nothing comes of anything.
Did you see Inherent Vice?
No.
Similar concept. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, all right. That's your buddy, P.T. Barnum?
Yeah, P.T. Anderson, who... another thing about this, about Mulholland Drive and the connection to Paul Thomas Anderson, it is kind of a... You know, L.A. as the backdrop, it kind of becomes its own character.
Yeah, well, that's the same as in Lebowski. It's like, you know, just being in L.A. means that your landlord also does, like, stupid interpretive dance theater.
Exactly.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah, it means that you're, like, even if you're not really a willing participant, you're in this world where there's, like, these cowboy characters who are somehow controlling Hollywood movies or Lebowski's.
The cowboy I really liked. That was a weird scene.
He was great.
But good. But also one of those scenes where it's like, why the fuck would this guy go? That guy, I honestly, the whole movie, I was like, when's this guy going to get killed? Because like he comes home and there's
the
like
director.
The director. There's like a suspicious car in his home. And it's like, oh, shit. I was like, get out the room, bitch. Get out the room. They call the cops. And then it's just Billy Ray Cyrus porking his old lady.
Yeah, fucking Billy Ray. So good. I mean, yeah, there's a lot with this movie. You can just grab any one moment or one theme and run with it.
Is it better seeing it more than once?
I don't know
if it is it exactly the same because nothing falls into place.
I don't know if it changes your concept of the movie as much as like a Lebowski, a similarly confusing movie that would get better the more you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it definitely doesn't drop off. I think the good thing about seeing it a second time was mainly because that guy introducing it kind of told us to, but he kind of just sat there and appreciated it as a movie.
It's like, appreciate it, fucker.
Yeah, like, don't think about it too much. So that's what I would say, like, you know, anyone who hasn't seen the movie, if you do see it, don't get too hung up on, like, what's happening, and just, like, sit back and appreciate the movie, like, the, you know, the dialogue, the performances. Naomi Watts was, like, absolutely incredible in that movie.
It's one of those things that even just the, like, the mood, because that was, again, like I said, you know, while watching Anthropoid, you know, my fists were clenched through the whole thing in tightness. I found myself fiddling with my wedding ring a lot, just like, you know how you do, you, like, spin it when you're nervous. Mm-hmm. Throughout that whole movie, it was a different kind of tension, where it wasn't like the moment itself was super tense, but it was like you're just waiting for something to go really wrong in a way that you don't feel like you can accept. You know how sometimes movies do that, where they take you to a place that you're really just not comfortable being, like Zed's basement in Pulp Fiction.
Yep.
It's just like something like that, where you're just like waiting for it to go to a place that you're going to feel just uncomfortable watching it. Mm-hmm. And that movie, just little things, you know, like you said, that weird looking guy, the landlady, who was kind of an old Hollywood, an ugly woman.
She was a famous actress in old Hollywood. That was her last performance, actually.
She looks like someone who's had a lot of, like, plastic surgery and is, like, obviously wearing way too much makeup and is done up as, like, a Chinese woman, you know, just like a tasteless, you know, like a real tasteless kind of sense of style. And it kind of puts you off.
Yeah, she was a good example of the movie's connection, somewhat homage to an old Hollywood. And I don't know about you, but after watching the movie, I saw it with a few friends, and some of them commented that some of the acting performances they thought were pretty, like, stilted.
Mm-hmm. But
hers was a little odd, and the cowboy guy was a little odd, but my kind of interpretation of it was that it was in the style of, like, an old movie that were somewhat more like plays, so it wasn't like a naturalistic acting.
Yeah,
you see a lot today where it's like, I'm just watching a person living. They're not an actor. This was more like specific acting.
Yeah, Naomi Watts, even, like, the first half of the movie, she's playing a part, really. You know, she's kind of like, hey, I'm Chipper Little Betty. Mm-hmm. And, or Betsy or Betty? What the hell was her name?
Betty.
Oh. And at first I thought it was because that then creates such a contrast when she does the acting, you know, the acting part with the old George Harrison kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, obviously the second half of the movie also, she's completely a different character. And so it's one of those things that's like an intentional fakeness, because it's off-putting and it reminds you of, like, a dreamscape. It reminds me a bit of, have you seen A Clockwork Orange?
No.
They have the Mr. Fuck, what the fuck's the guy's name?
Mr. Orange
from Reservoir Dogs. Mr. Alexander is the guy, the husband of the woman who's raped early in the movie. And he acts so weird, like, to the extent that they must have done take after take after take of just like, no, even further from reality. Like, deliver the lines, like, even less realistically. And it's just because it gives you this really bizarre, off-putting sense. And in a way, you know, movies are about manipulation, so sometimes that kind of thing's more important than, like, oh, it's so realistic.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I think this movie is trying to accomplish. It's not, it's this example of what you're saying. You can make a movie that isn't just a window into reality. It's its own thing, and it doesn't need to make sense. It doesn't need to be what, like, normal humans do or say or act. It's, like, very, very much apparent that you're watching a film for that reason.
Yeah,
and I think the whole movie is just kind of a movie about movies, in a sense, like that, a movie about films.
You've seen The Shining, right?
Yes.
It's so unsettling in that sense. In fact, right, I wish I had more lights on. I'm thinking about, like, the old people, like, cackling and...
That ending scene, the suicide scene, is so horrible.
I know. It's, like, it's making me feel weird just reminiscing about it.
Yeah, between that and that monster...
The monster
person. Monster bomb.
I kept waiting for him to show up again. I was like, it would be silly after some point. But
yeah, if they kept coming back, yeah.
Just some like silly fate, because he's kind of smiling too, right?
Yeah, I think a little bit, somewhat kind of like that, kind of like a witch. There's a theory out there too. I don't remember as much about this one, but there's a theory with that monster character is also Naomi Watts. Ooh. It's like one of her other personas, because he like has the box or whatever.
And well, it makes you. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, one of the interesting connections, or I guess proof that people use of that, is that character is played by an actress, okay. Even though it kind of looks like a guy. Like
yeah, it does look like a guy, and he's mentioned guy. As a man actress. In the dream.
Yeah, that's right.
That's interesting. Well, it makes me realize, being mostly unfamiliar with Lynch's work, just how much his work must have influenced. Do you remember that game Killer 7?
Yeah.
Again, extremely similar vibe. And I loved that game, but it was just, again, just an off-putting, nothing really seems realistic. And again, one of those, once you kind of allow for some unrealism, you open up these weird theories of, you know, oh, what if this person has multiple forms, and what if all that kind of sort of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of an outlier game. And that even the movement's very different from any other game you play. The art style at the time was so different. But yeah, that is something Lynch does really well. The movies themselves take place in like a real world. You know, it's not like dragons or monsters or anything, but there is that potential for anything to happen still. That, I don't know. It's a weird, you know, connection there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it can kind of make conventional movies seem boring, because there's nothing more disappointing to me than when I'm watching a movie and I kind of have a good idea of how it's going to end.
Yeah.
And so on the plus side, you know, a movie that you have no idea how it's going to end is a little more of an interesting story than, oh, the guy who's, you know, looking for his daughter is probably going to find the guy who kidnapped his daughter, and then they're going to fight and kill him. That's the movie.
Yeah, and the movies like that can be entertaining still, obviously, but like you were talking with Anthropoid, movies where you have no idea where it's going to go, they can make you tense and have like a reaction physically, because you can't predict it, because your mind's like trying to put it together while it's happening, so you're caught off guard at all times.
I was thinking, these are two extremely heavy movies in the same week. And I'm wondering how this podcast is going to turn out, if it's going to be like boring, because it's going to be like, what'd you think of it? It's heavy, man. Fucking heavy.
Yeah, our tone is definitely more somber than some of the other podcasts we've done.
Well, previously we've done talking about apes, about hobbits, mutants. I think that I didn't listen to the last fantasy, one other than editing it, but I think it was a lot more somber. The Stranger Things.
Yeah, well, I think also, just this movie, these movies, when, you know, you watch a solid, well put together movie, the discussion is going to be a little bit more about the
movie itself, the rather than like 80 different tangents, which is what we're famous for.
Yeah, online. Famous across the internet. Yeah. And it's harder to make fun of it too.
Yeah, I was going to, I forgot. I was going to say about Anthropoid that, it's about some Czechs who decided that we're not going to take it anymore. And I was going to then dub in, we're not going to take it anymore. I was like, yeah, that'll lighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, we need to lighten it up.
Yeah, this is the least zoo radio podcast I've ever heard.
Yeah, for being the first one where we use our zoo radio names too.
Yeah. I've been enjoying it so far, though. And I'm not sure, though, if the direction we should go in is more structured. I kind of like the idea of doing you know, new in theaters movies, and I actually thought about planning it like for several weeks out what I'm going to watch, so that I can like we could have these, and maybe, you know, write reviews, and then by the time Sundance rolls around, we'll be able to go to it and have kind of like a next morning, all right, we did this, and this, and have maybe a following, possibly. Long shot.
Hey, yeah, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'll have to listen to this one and see how it turns out.
I think maybe it was one of our better breakdowns. Maybe not, also. We picked one movie that's like impossible to break down.
Yeah, I felt very useless. I was like, what happened? I like that one part, that one scene that I could imagine in and of itself.
The problem is I have like a whole notepad of like those different theories and just notes and everything, and to go through all of them would take like fucking 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
So maybe it's best just kind of just skim the top.
Just skim the top. But
the cream that rises.
What do you think about this format of just, you know, a new movie review? And then the other idea was that we might do a coming off of Netflix movie so that people, all the people listening would then be like, oh, I should see, I don't know.
The only problem with that is like, you know, you say, oh, this movie's leaving soon, you should watch it. But like, you know, no one's listening to this podcast the next day. But well, I do
it at all.
Yeah, I think the idea of watching something new is always good, just to keep it relevant. But obviously, there's so many older movies that I want to see, and usually then also want to talk about that. I feel like we should include those.
One thing we should definitely do, 100% continue.
Drops, soundboards.
But what we should continue to do is speak about the podcast. The kind of talk we should be having after the podcast, but like on the air, like record, like what we're doing now.
Yeah, no, this is the best part.
Yeah, that's the best idea we've ever had. Just talking about why is it, was this one boring? I don't know.
Yeah, there's nothing better than like the next day meeting.
Yeah, so we'll just
live.
We are somewhat improving though. We usually do it at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But
we haven't hit our hour mark yet. We're not even at 50 minutes yet.
Yeah, I don't think we've hit an hour for any of them.
Fuck.
Well, keep it loose.
That was
my
goal.
Keep it tight.
Fast and loose.
We'll get there. How about next time we do a new movie, a movie on Netflix, and then a discussion? Maybe not even the discussion about movies, but about...
life?
No. Just, I mean, it has to be movie-based. It's got to be movies. No, but not about a movie, but about, you know, like trailers or... some aspect of film.
Yeah, we got to finish that trailer talk that got ruined by the apes.
Yeah. Well, you should listen to Chapo Trap House, the one they did about Suicide Squad. They have a good discussion of trailers. Because you hate political podcasts, but this one is actually about a movie.
I hate so politics. Okay. Next time I see the new movie, though. How about that?
Okay. Well, I'm going to always watch a new movie, so we can both watch it.
Ooh.
Or we can not talk about the one I see. I don't care. It's a lot of wasted time and money on my part.
Kind of liked, you know, the idea of one of us watching a movie that the other hasn't seen.
All right. Why don't we take this offline?
Yeah. Definitely cut out the last 15 minutes.
Yeah. Cut out the last 15 minutes. Cut out the first 15 minutes. Have a nice...
Record the outro now. Now.
Now. Well, this has been... Do we do an outro? Is there any reason for
Flinch
it?
And the Master Dog.
Flinch and the Masturbator.
Yeah, it's Mastodon spelled D-O-N-G. Mastodong.
Flitch and the Mastodong. Signing out.
See you next time. I'm waving.
See you later.